어떡해 네 마음도 든 녹아버리게 또다시 원해 널 내 곁에 yeah 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 I want you to cry cry for me 너 연기라도 해 빨리 cry for me make it rain
This is Bird Note. For folks looking to try birding for the first time, getting started can be daunting. Should you learn every species call, every subtle feather pattern before you head out to look for birds? While it's good to prepare, there's a risk of scaring yourself out of starting and preventing the kind of hands-on experiential learning that's one of the best parts of birding. So when you have the time and energy, just go for it. Learning about birds is the work of a lifetime. That's why it's so rewarding. And there are great tools to help you out. Bringing a field guide with you is a time-tested approach. Even the experts turn to a field guide when they're stumped. Newer tools like the Merlin Bird ID app help identify which species you're seeing or hearing right on your phone. And if you can find another birder or a group to tag along with, all the better. You can learn from people with more experience and share the joys and struggles with fellow newbies. For many people, talking to other birders is nearly as fun as finding the birds. For Bird Note, I'm Jonice Franklin.
special by Twice here in Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Before that, you heard Cry For Me, also by Twice, off of this Twice-centric playlist on the program. I was talking last week on Thursday to a superior at work about how I was going to see Twice on Friday evening. And she was not all that familiar with Twice at all, actually. But she was like, oh, you know what? I heard them on the radio this morning. I was like, oh, that's so great. But in my mind, I was like, yeah, but like, who was the first who brought them onto the radio here in Vancouver? Like, who was one of, if not the first, then one of the first, right? Who has been playing Twice on her radio program since 2019? Who?
It was me. I have been playing Twice on Typically Tuesdays for years. I've been playing Twice on community radio even before I started Typically Tuesdays. Like, excuse me? Can we please just acknowledge this? Not only did I start doing it before it was cool, one, but I have a genuine love for Twice that made me put them onto radio in Canada. Hello? JYP Entertainment, please contact me for inquiries to interview Twice. Because without me and other fans of Twice who have radio shows in Canada, before they became popular in North America with the mainstream audiences, before they started to tour This Is Four, there was me.
Anyways, I just wanted to put that out there. And you can contact me at typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. I am waiting. Haha. Anyways, so let's actually talk about, again, how K-pop idol fandom in the international sphere has changed. And, you know, I want to say, like, I am not a scholar. I'm not an academic. I'm not a cultural critic. These are just observations that I have made from my little fangirl brain. And also, though, I did study communications, and many of my assignments were about this particular thing, about labor and fandom. And so these are just, you know, these are just observations, right? But essentially, you know, Twice's company didn't ever solely rely on broadcast media in order to get Twice's name out there, in order to, like, garner more fans. And I think one of the reasons why Twice is considered Asia's girl group is because the company focused so much of its marketing energy into social media and allowed for folks all over the world to really engage with the group and their content a lot easier. One of the things I think they really relied on was this thing called the point choreography. Now, I'm just going to say, like, in my opinion, and this is subjective, please do not harass me. In my opinion, the first 4 to 5 years of Twice's existence, I did not necessarily feel that they had the most complicated nor interesting choreography in the world, but it was very, very easy to follow. And one of the reasons why is because they would have this thing that called point choreography. It was like a few moves during the chorus of their songs that were distinct and brought out the characteristics of the track, essentially. Those parts were because of how distinct they were also very easy to do. And so even when the TikTok dance challenges were not as ubiquitous and everywhere as they are now, but Twice's team, if I recall correctly, you know, pretty early on into their career, maybe like 2 or 3 years into their career, they started to kind of like market the concept of a point choreography. And whenever Twice would perform, or whenever Twice would promote a new single, because there were these moments in their choreography that were relatively simple and easy for people to follow, their team would invite other K-pop acts to perform those little segments with Twice members, and they would upload those short videos online onto like their social media and their YouTube. And you know, I don't recall that there were many other groups that were doing this, because quite, if I'm going to be very honest, again, my subjective opinion is that a lot of other choreographies were not, they definitely were not as like eye-catching in or attention-grabbing in the way that Twice's point choreography was, but also they were a little bit more complicated and harder for people to follow, and which made it so that, like, you know, if you were not, you know, a trained dancer and you were a fan, you might not be as inclined to do one of the other groups kind of like point choreography challenges, but you might be more inclined to do Twice's because it was catchy, it was accessible, and it was, you know, attention grabbing, it was cute. So I feel like this is just one example of the way that, like, Twice's company really, like, utilized social media to its advantage and really chose not to, you know, rely too much on the typical conventions of idol promotion and production many, many years ago. But of course, the other really big thing was that their company had the resources and also had the cleverness to produce their own reality series for Twice, about Twice, and would always upload them straight onto their YouTube channel. As I mentioned earlier, K-pop production companies usually wanted to, like, land some kind of variety show series or, like, reality show series for their acts whenever it was time for them to promote a new single. But they always relied on, you know, broadcast media, always relying on television, and then later on a little bit more on, like, more private streaming platforms. Twice could do it basically in-house and just upload it right onto YouTube. For the first 4 or 5 years, I think they were still relying on the fan subgroups. So the fan subgroup would, you know, pull the video off of YouTube, and then each week they would, like, translate it and upload it somewhere. It became really apparent, though, that because JYP Entertainment had more direct control and ownership of their reality series, it was not always the easiest to access as an English-speaking fan, or as, like, a fan of any other who, like, spoke any other language other than Korean online, just because they would be able to essentially go for the copyright strike. And in that case, it's like, you know, it's pretty tragic, right? You're relying on your fandom, your group's fandom community to do free labor for you, but you're not allowing them to actually truly benefit in any way. You're still going after, you know, these ownership claims that, you know, if they keep piling up, eventually could bring these regular human beings into financial ruin. But they are helping you promote your group to people who, despite how well-resourced you are as a company, are not able to access the content that you are putting up online because they do not speak the language that your performance or performers are speaking. and, you know, that's always kind of been strange to me. But I think the success of these in-house production Twice reality series, which happened during every promotion cycle, mind you. I don't know if they've had a recent one actually for This Is Four. I have a feeling they've been too busy touring and doing other things to make a new reality program. But it used to be that every promotion cycle, they would release a series of reality shows. And they happen so often that for me as a viewer, I would sometimes wonder to myself, like, are Twice actually, like, are they actually resting? Because they gotta learn these new songs and like practice choreographies and stuff, and they gotta like record stuff, and then there's like a bunch of other extracurricular like business ventures that they have, and then they're also like filming like this reality show, and they're doing live streams all the time. Like, are they resting? And that's a different can of worms. But what I'm trying to say, of course, is that like the company knew exactly what their marketing strategy was. They were going to regularly make these, I think they used to be called Time to Twice. I don't remember, but they were going to make this a regular anticipated series for viewers to promote Twice's work. Eventually, other K-pop production companies started to do that more often as well, even if they didn't have the budget to produce like a full like reality series. They started to look into having their performers film vlogs and like having their performers also participate in point choreography dance challenges on social media. Eventually, we also get to the point where video streaming platforms do also agree that accessibility and closed captioning benefits their business ventures greatly, and so they make this function more accessible for many of their users online. And for a very short period of time, if I recall correctly, for a very short period of time, the videos that would be uploaded by these K-pop groups and these K-pop production companies, they would allow for users to subtitle the video for them into various languages, which was great, right? Now you make this service way more accessible and easier for folks to access. The issue being, of course, is that, you know, essentially like translation is no longer as much of a community or collective effort, because you no longer need timers and coders involved in the translation of your group's programming. And also, and yet there is still this continued reliance on the fandom's passion and volunteerism to help the group grow and reach a wider audience. It was always a little bit weird for me to know that, like, there are obviously people who work at these K-pop production companies who, like, speak multiple languages and can write in multiple languages, and they are not being hired to like make this content necessarily available all the time. Like, nobody's really getting paid to do these translations. It is really the volunteerism of the fandom who does it. since it has now become more of a common practice to look to social media and what social media can offer for a company in terms of like promotion and marketing of their idol group has become a more common practice. And since making captions and translations more available within those videos has also become a more common practice, we have unfortunately seen the rise of generative AI in basically like every single field of entertainment. Of course, sadly, including in these translations of the audiovisual content that idol companies put out. And for me, again, that is where it gets unfortunate and even more complicated, right? Because in the past, companies were relying on the free labor of fans to, you know, help them promote their work to an international audience. And now they are relying on generative AI, which is typically not always the best way to go in terms of translation beyond just like the ethics of it all. You know, AI cannot capture context. It cannot capture things like tone. It cannot capture all of the beautiful nuances of language in the way that a fan sub community might, because AI is not interested in learning all of the nuances of a language. A fan translator might be more inclined to do that. And in general, just like a lot of these translations are not good, I'm sorry about it. For example, this is not K-pop specifically, but a J-pop group that I quite like called Nogizaka 46, they have started to rely on, for a few years, rely on AI to translate their group's regular television show that they also upload onto YouTube. So I remember what they would say, I remember, you know, how they would say it, what the context was, and the AI translations just don't do that justice. And, you know, it's just like kind of crappy, it's just kind of sad, you know? Just wrapping up the show, there's so much more that I can say about this topic, but it's been really interesting to see the ways that fans have been able to interact with the programming that idol production companies put out, particularly on social media. And I really do think that Twice was one of the few in like 10 years ago that were utilizing social media and exploring all that it could offer in order to expand their brand and their presence. I really do think the way that Twice's team utilized social media 10 years ago helped construct the blueprint of how we currently interact with mainstream idol acts now throughout various industries, not just in K-pop, but also for some of the more mainstream J-pop groups, and also just like all over the map. And I do, of course, wish that they weren't using so much generative AI. I think the responsibility of pushing back against that really comes